Conspiracy of the insignificant. Why have a significant conspiracy when you can have PQ Ribber babbling at you, representing perhaps, if not, the finest arts and bizarro ensemble and cult in New Mexico and possibly the world?
Tittering.
Hello?
Titter.
Beaver!
Hi, dear. You want to see me, Dad?
Beaver, 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 beaver.
Yes, sir.
Beaver.
Yes, sir.
Beaver.
No, sir.
Beaver, 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 beaver.
Yes, sir.
All right, Beaver. A thing is either right or it's wrong.
Oh.
And if it's wrong in the first place, then it's right. Do you understand?
But
just remember one thing. Wrong is right, even if everyone says it's wrong.
Gee.
Oh, no, Beaver.
What?
Right.
And, this is it. 10 shows in 9 days, even a day earlier than the original plan. It is September 15th, 2010, and that is significant because today I have been in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico for 4 years. That's right. Oh, man, it's like completing a college curriculum. I've put in my 4 years. Oh, yes. And the 1906 World Series and Three Finger Mordecai Brown, we're going to talk about them in just a moment. But first, I am just Bill Cosby. Now, there was, at one time, a very funny, innovative, brilliant comedian. But God, when somebody jumps the shark like Bill Cosby has, and I can pinpoint it. I mean, he was coming out with great comedy records, making appearances. Yeah, he had that series in the 70s where he played a gym coach named Reuben Kincaid that didn't do too well, but it was okay. It was funny. It did its thing. The day that some stupid effing university decided that they were going to make Bill Cosby Dr. William Cosby was the end. I mean, and this guy, I mean, he came out with this really terrible hokey album back in the 70s, Bill Cosby Talks to Kids About Drugs, that he has intentionally hidden from the world if he can keep it off of his discographies right along with his adult album that he pretends he never did. And somebody had the Bill Cosby Talks to Kids About Drugs posted on some obscure site online. He actually enjoined them and made them take it down. I own a copy found at a thrift store. Actually, Fruitcake Toothpaste owns a copy that I have access to. And it is a terrible. I don't think that album would stop anybody and never did from taking drugs. It sounds like Bill Cosby is on drugs for the entire duration of the album. Yeah. The other thing is, besides that, well, once he did that, the same person who posted that, if you go to YouTube and search House of Cosbys, there's an animated series that lasts at the fifth episode is just so funny because he'd been hit with another cease and desist. And, of course, you have the Bill Cosby sex scandal, which, if you look at his biography on Wikipedia, he conveniently seems to have deleted any mention of it. Bill Cosby would like to whitewash his career to make him look like Mr. Innocence and Light when, you know, he was a great comedian, but, you know, you gotta take the good with the bad, and, you know what I say about Dr. William H. Cosby? Big, stinking phony, and will never be in the conspiracy of the insignificant hall of people who mean anything to anyone. Yeah! And now let's have a little interlude and we'll be back with the 1906 World Series for ya.
Howdy, this is Lawrence Chuck Peterton, your novice sports reporter, coming to you from our new low-input station here in Elderhide, Montana. And as usual, because of budgetary limitations, our guest today is another sports figure who's had it. He's ex-swimming champion Nick Flail Edwards. And Nick, what are you doing these days?
Well, Chuck, I'm in the restaurant business in the town of Blair's Bend.
Like so many other ex-athletes, eh?
Oh, that's right. My restaurant is called A Stroke, and the specialty of the house is carp.
Well, isn't carp a fish that's hard to get, Nick?
Well, yes, but I have it flown in from New York, see?
The airport there at Blair's End?
The nearest airport is 300 miles away in Loose Shale. And the carp is delivered by bus from Loose Shale. It takes about 5 days before I get the carp.
Well, how's the business at your restaurant, The Stroke?
Well, I never go near the place. I rented an empty store about 100 feet up the street from The Stroke, and I conduct the business from there. But as for your question, I don't think I'm doing too well.
I see. Well, Nick, as a sports figure who's had it, what was the high spot in your swimming career as you look back now?
Well, I'd say in 1932... I became interested in underwater swimming, and that year I swam around Manhattan Island underwater.
Wow.
And stayed under for 7 hours.
That's a long time, Nick. Were you in any way affected by having been underwater for that length of time?
Well, Chuck, for about 2 months after that particular feat, I was unable to eat any food unless it was served on a hook.
Mm-hmm. Nick, as a swimmer who's had it, so to speak, what started you on your downfall? Can you tell us?
Well, it was in 1934. I attempted to swim the English Channel. And with all that grease on me, I sank like a stone as soon as I hit the water. Ooh. And there was a lot of bad publicity, and things didn't go too well after that.
Well, what did you do when you found things weren't going so well for you?
Well, I kicked around. I got a job in the Everglades wrestling alligators.
How did that work out?
Well, it was a big scandal. A couple of alligators were caught throwing the bouts.
And after that?
Well, I got a job with a circus, jumping from a height of 300 feet into a tank filled with 2 feet of water.
Did you cut the mustard on that job, Nick?
Yeah, I sure did. Except on the nights that the elephants get thirsty and drain the tank.
Well,
the tank.
I guess it is an unhappy memory for you. The job must have toughened you up, however.
Well, it taught me that life is full of hard knocks. I'd say it did that.
Which brings us to the present. How come, Nick, you decided to go into the restaurant business?
Well, I found out that I could have carp flown in daily from New York City. And I wasn't going to pass up an opportunity like that.
Well, thanks very much for being with us today. Former sports great Nick Flail Edwards. And when the great swimming pool is drained dry, I'm sure your name will be visible at the bottom.
Now, the 1906 World Series, some of these, I mean, I'm glad I'm not trying to, like, fill a certain amount of time. This is a quickie one. The first, quote-unquote, Subway Series in the history of Major League Baseball. The Chicago White Sox played the Chicago Cubs. The Chicago Cubs had an incredible season. They won 116 out of 154 games. That's a .763 winning percentage. The Chicago White Sox, on the other hand, were known as the Hitless Wonders. They had the worst team batting average in the American League, but won the American League and won the World Series in 6 games. I mean, all the future Hall of Famers were Chicago Cubs, even though they lost. This Chicago White Sox was a no-name, no-talent team that won a World Series. Go figure that. The winning player's share of the monies was $1,875, a tidy sum back in the day, and losing players won $440. The curiosity piece was a gentleman who pitched for the Cubs, Mordecai Brown, known as Three Finger Brown, in which case you take a look at the graphic I made for this particular program and you will see some spiffy close-ups of his bizarre hand that became mangled in a threshing machine and caused him to have a really cool curveball, apparently, and to make him the Hall of Famer he is today. 1907 coming up next. We're just keeping the old news and trivia coming for you on this series. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
I think I better talk to Wally.
Wally?
Wally?
Wally.
Wally.
Wally?
Did you want something, Dad?
Yeah,
Conspiracy of the Insignificant is brought to you by Rubber Room Entertainment Labs. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. 3 bags full. the Overnightscape Underground. I'm PQ Ribber. Thank you so much for listening. Tune in again real soon.